It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back into another edition of the FFSN NFL Draft Recap Show. This is Jeremy Betts alongside Andrew Wilbar to break down everything that went down on day three of the NFL Draft. If you missed our round one recap from Friday morning, you can go back and check that one out. We did a day two recap of rounds two and three as well that ran on Saturday morning. This one is going to run for you Sunday morning and be available anywhere you get your podcasts. We're going to be breaking down each round in day three, rounds four through seven, giving our favorite and maybe even some picks that we didn't like as much. But Andrew, it was a crazy draft. I think the six quarterbacks going early and then no quarterbacks until the fifth round or fourth round, maybe. We'll find that out again here. But I think just getting into the fact that such a vast opening and like time between the early quarterbacks going and then late left a lot of uncertainty in the air and a lot of just kind of waiting around and wondering for maybe the casual draft watcher. But in the meantime, teams were making impactful selections in rounds four, five, six, and seven. And we were just looking through it. And it was actually, you kind of take a step back from the draft process and you're like, it's a lot of players, it's a lot of picks, but teams finding value late. And we're seeing it still with undrafted free agency going on right now. And you can check out trackers for that anywhere. I'm pretty sure FFSN and the Steel Curtain Network where we write for will be tracking the Steelers selections there too. But Andrew, bringing you in here to talk about day three, how do you feel after the wrap of the draft and this day specifically?
Can I say tired?
Yes, absolutely. I'm the same way. Absolutely.
It's a lot, but when you know it only comes once a year, it's like, man, it's already done. Like all of that, yeah. And it's already over. Even day three, we're talking specifically day three, for a day that there wasn't a bunch of crazy movement. There weren't a bunch of wild quarterback picks. It kept my interest the whole day. I think it kept the interest of the regular fan. It was a very well-balanced day. You saw some really good skill players that were still on the board that got taken. You saw some English players and Canadian players that got taken and that have their own level of intrigue that could be really good starters down the line. They're projects right now, but have a ton of upside. There's so much to look forward to in this draft, and there was an intriguing last couple of rounds.
It absolutely was, and just to correct myself here, it was the fifth round where the next quarterback was taken, Spencer Rattler going to the Saints. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, Andrew, let's jump back into round four here, which opened up on day three. And there were some good picks early. I really, really liked the Troy Franklin selection by the Broncos at this point in the draft, reuniting him with Bo Nix in Denver to give kind of a big play weapon down the field, a guy with some shiftiness who can work inside and outside. I think that that's a great pick for the Broncos. One of my favorite picks in round four, and that was just right off the bat. Go ahead and give me some favorite picks of yours in round four as well.
Yeah, there were a lot that I really liked. And one of the ones that stands out to me specifically that I did not like the player overall. I was lower on the player in general, Jeremy, but Troy Franklin from Denver, because he's being paired with his quarterback, Bo Nix, that's why it makes sense. I was not the biggest Franklin fan, but in the fourth round, there's very little risk, and pairing him with Bo Nix makes him smart, makes it a really smart move. I like that one. There's another one that I really like that stood out to me was Malik Mustafa, safety from the San Francisco, now for the San Francisco 49ers. The dude hits people, and he reminds me a lot, a low key of a downhill mindset of Talanoa Hufanga. Different skill set slightly, but going to play a similar role. Obviously, Hufanga's had some injury issues, but when he's on the field, man, he is a big part of that San Francisco defense. Now you get another guy like that, another hitter in that secondary. Man, they're going to be striking some fear into these receivers over the middle of the field and these tight ends, because these guys know how to hit people. And I'll mention one more name, Jeremy, and I know that you like this player too, so you can comment on him as well. Jaden Hicks. Yeah. I thought he was worthy of a late second, early third round selection. So versatile. He's got athleticism too, and he's going to a great landing spot in Kansas City who needs some help in the secondary.
Did the Chiefs not just like nail this draft? I mean,
they did.
Fantastic work by Kansas City. Brett not Veach, fair. Andy Reid. It's disgusting, really. It's disgusting. Yep. For all fans of AFC teams other than Kansas City fans, it makes your blood boil a little bit, because, I mean, at this point, a three-peat is very, very much in play. They're probably going to be better this year than they were last year in a Super Bowl winning season, Andrew.
As long as that offensive line holds up and the secondary, that loss of Snead, they still haven't fully figured that out. And I do think the loss of the linebacker that ended up signing with the Saints, one-year deal, again, forgive me, my brain is
Willie
completely
Gay.
Fried with
Willie Gay.
Willie Gay, the guy I wanted for the Steelers. He's gone, and there's a role that's missing there. So there are some pieces on the defense that still need some work. But overall, I would agree with you. The offense looks much better this year.
I really liked what the Ravens did in round four, bringing in Tez Walker from North Carolina, and then getting a cornerback that slipped probably because of the athletic testing. Andrew knocked him down the boards a little bit. I don't think he's going to be able to play outside. At the next level, he's probably going to move inside where you can mask some of his shortcomings athletically. But the Ravens taking TJ Tampa at pick 130 out of Iowa State, that was a big deal for them. They get two corners in this draft to help out the secondary. And not a huge fan personally of the first round selection of Nate Wiggins, but he's a good player. And this is a team that needed to stay competitive. Whether or not the coaching changes and the overall losses that this team endured after a big time season last year, is this enough to make up for that? That remains to be seen, but you have to like what they did in round four. And then I've also got to mention one of my draft crushes, and you've heard me talk about him on this show and others. And that is Isaac Garendo.
Yeah.
Going to the 49ers. That just is such a 49ers pick. And to me, a guy who can step in and be a real difference maker as a kick returner right away, and also in the running game potentially with his home run hitting ability, his size, his speed mixes very well with what the 49ers would like to do. Kind of, they like their one cut and go runners outside of McCaffrey, and I think that this fits them pretty well. Did you like this pick as much as I did?
I did. I really did. And when you're talking specifically about Guerrero, he complements Christian McCaffrey so well, I can't help but think they're going to try to find a way to get him on the field early on. And with his speed, he doesn't have much tread on the tires. And McCaffrey, as he starts to age, if they want him to age gracefully, this is a way to take away some of those goal line opportunities, give him to Guerrero, see if he's got what it takes at the NFL level. He's got every trait in the book.
Don't say that, Andrew. Fantasy footballers are not going to like that plan. Give the ball to McCaffrey on the goal line. It makes sense from a team building perspective and trying to keep him healthy. But yeah, any picks you didn't like in the fourth round, Andrew, anything stand out to you there?
Looking over it, I thought Tyrese Knight, linebacker from UTEP, I think he's a good fit in Seattle, but that was a reach in my opinion. Evan Williams, the safety from Oregon, I didn't have him in the top 200. I thought that was a reach. For the most part, I don't think there's anything outlandishly bad. A few minor reaches. Even A.J. Barron, the tight end from Michigan, I thought was a little bit of a reach. A punter in the fourth round. I would argue with that in some ways. The Bears could use an upgrade there. And if you look at the Bears draft with five picks, they got five players that could potentially see playing time all in their rookie season, from the punter to Booker, yep, the edge rusher. Like, and from that aspect, they nailed the draft by getting instant playmakers. I'm not gonna say any of the other ones. There's a few that I'm a little hesitant on, but I will say in general, the running backs, I love these running backs that went off in the fourth round and their fits with the teams they landed at.
I agree. Let's move on to the fifth round where things got interesting again. Andrew, let's start out with a Buffalo Bills selection that could be one of the steals of the draft based on where you had him ranked. And it's a center replacement for Mitch Morse. Who was it?
That is an easy one. Cedric Van Prong Granger. I do not regret, Jeremy, having him 36th overall on the big board. I have no regrets about it at all. This guy's got what it takes. If this man's arms are 2 inches longer, he is going way higher than what anyone else says he's going to go. Way higher than anyone else thought he was going to go. Those 2 inches mean everything. And he does lose the battle for leverage at times, and that's something he's going to have to overcome. But in the fifth round, a team that needs a center, on top of that, Van Prong has a chance to come in immediately and have a chance to contend for a starting spot, in my opinion. I think he's going to get playing time, whether it be at guard or at center. They're going to find a way to get him in and get him some playing time early. I absolutely love the Cedric Van Prong pick. He has all-pro potential. I've said it before. Athletically speaking, this man has all-pro potential. And when you look at how he moved along that Georgia offensive line, he was the glue to that unit. There's a lot of talent there, but Van Prong was the glue that put it all together. And I think he can do the same thing for that offensive line in Buffalo.
SVPG. He's got more names than, I don't know, a law firm, but he is a great selection there. So what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to ask you specifically for the Philadelphia Eagles, how on God's green earth did Jeremiah Trotter Jr. fall to pick 155?
Yeah.
And on top of that, they also, a couple picks before that, get Anaya Smith, the wide receiver from Texas A&M. The rich only get richer.
Good stuff from the Eagles. I wanted to say something about the Saints as well, getting a quarterback wide receiver combo here in the fifth round and Spencer Rattler.
Yeah.
And then Bub Means, super underrated. I thought Bub Means could go in the fourth round, but he, big play threat down the field, a bigger bodied physical receiver. And then Rattler's got a lot of upside, Andrew. And I know he's not a big bodied quarterback, but he does have a lot of upside. And if the Saints and Derek Carr don't figure things out early this season, could there be calls for Spencer Rattler to try to make a movement as the QB1 for the Saints? Even this year, I'm not suggesting that's the case or going to be the case, but it does present itself as a possibility. So I like what they did from that perspective. But yeah, the Eagles landing Jeremiah Trotter Jr., that's not only is it a great story, but it just doesn't make sense to me how he lasts into round five. And Anaya Smith's a really good pick for them as well. I like the Chiefs getting Hunter Norzad out of Pitt, Penn State. I think they see him as a guard potentially, but he could play center for them as well. He's got some flexibility there. Did anybody else stand out to you, good or bad, in the fifth round?
Another guy that I really liked, Tyrone Tracy, running back from Purdue, can play a little bit of running back and receiver. Like him, Quantes Diggers, the guy we mentioned, I think even yesterday, as one of the guys available from the Toronto Argonauts. This guy is a player, absolute baller. He's got the instincts. He's got the ball skills. He's got the coverage ability. He's got the athleticism. He is a little bit raw coming from the CFL. It's going to take time to make the transition. But the Jets, they've got their starters in place in the secondary. This is a good situation for him to sit back, sit behind a guy like Sauce Gardner, who's was a very quick developer at the NFL level, came out very pro-ready, but still one of the best corners in the game. This is a great landing spot for Quantes Diggers. I think he's got starting potential down the line.
This fifth round was crazy for the defensive backs.
Yep.
Started out with two of them, Nehemiah Pritchett going to Seattle, Tarheeb still going to the Chargers, and then the Chargers just three picks later take Cam Hart. And then you had, let's see, another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You had double digit corners go after that in this round. It was a good round for the secondary. Teams were making plays on some of these smaller guys, some of these slot guys, some of these higher upside outside guys as well that don't have a lot of production. So traits and performance for the inside stuff, it makes sense that we had a ton of defensive backs in on our big board. There's just always so many of them, but they really went crazy with the defensive backs in this round. Let's see, a couple picks I wasn't a huge fan of. To the Colts, Jalen Carlees, the safety out of Missouri. I thought that there were some better options in the secondary for the Colts. And he just didn't strike me as a guy on tape that could do a whole lot of things well. I don't know what your evaluation of him was, but I think the Colts maybe strayed from their big, fast perspective on guys a little bit with this pick. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Carlees needs to make the transition to linebacker. He's just too big to be able to move quick enough at safety. I think he needs to make the move to linebacker. We'll see if that's what they end up doing with him. The Colts could use some depth at linebacker. De'Andre Prince wasn't a horrible pick, but a little bit of a reach in my opinion. Ulufosia, that was one I forgot to mention either. I liked that pick for Buffalo, as well as Dom Hampton for Washington. Overall, I thought teams did really well in this round. I would say if I'm looking at a pick that just a head scratcher, I'm very big in terms of athleticism. JD Bertrand is a leader. And I don't want to knock the pick for that reason, because the Falcons need help and they need leadership on that defense.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they drafted him for. But JD Bertrand, if they're expecting him to be in a immediate cover man and as a linebacker help out in coverage, that's not the guy that they think they drafted, because that's not one of his strengths. I thought they could have gotten him a little bit later. I didn't have a draftable grade on him, but that's not knowing him as a person. I know that he's a high character guy, leader. We've seen some guys like that come into the league and find a role just because they are the leaders, and everyone looks at them and their communication skills, their instincts that allows them to be good run defenders, and they're so rock solid. Maybe Bertrand can become that guy, but I felt as if that was a big reach.
Let's move on to the sixth round here, Andrew, and let's talk Dolphins, because they get a guy here in the sixth round, and we didn't even talk about their fourth round pick, running back Jalen Wright out of Tennessee. Another speedy guy. This is the fastest team in football, and it kind of, to me, as an aside, it's kind of a shame that they don't have, in my opinion, the quarterback to really take advantage of it. I think that Tua has his strengths, but I just don't know if he maximizes what they should be able to do on offense. But that being aside, Malik Washington, another fast guy on the interior. And this is a slot wide receiver from Virginia. 5'8", I believe, but he plays so much bigger than that. 5'8", 180, 190. He's really solidly built, fantastic route runner, great hands, plays football. He's just a good football player, and the Dolphins nailed that pick, I thought, to go along with their offensive philosophy and what they've been doing in this draft. Did you have anything else that stood out to you in round six?
Travis Glover was a guy we knew was going to come off the board at some point. He lands in a good spot in Green Bay. Looking at kind of the wild picks, I agree. Malik Washington was a great pick for Miami at this spot. Definitely the best value of anyone in this round. He models his game after Steve Smith Sr., and the guy looks like he's driven. I like the Marcellus Dial pick to New England. He can come and be an immediate contributor for them. Kamani Vital, a running back I really liked out of Troy, and he's going to get some tread early on in Jim Harbaugh's offense. I know that they have Gus Edwards and a couple other guys there, but he's going to get his touches. I would look at, there's one other one that really stood out to me. I'm just looking for it here. Oh, there's actually two. Nathaniel Watson from Mississippi State. Like we talked about before, he is the first player in SEC history to lead the conference in both tackles and sacks in the same season. The dude is a wrecking ball. Yeah, wow. He finds the football and makes plays on it. 4.63 speed, not elite athleticism, but guys like this that just have it, Jeremy, they always find a way to last in the NFL. I think this guy's going to carve out a long NFL career. He's going to be a starter for the Browns down the line. I really think so. And then Christian Mahogany from Boston College. I had a late third round grade on him. That's a great pickup for Detroit, who's looking at reshuffling that line after knowing what Frank, this could be Frank Ragnow's last season. I don't see Mahogany moving inside to center, but they have some other guys that have versatility on the roster. So if something happens to Ragnow where he has to maybe even call it quits before the season ends due to another injury, they have some versatility there. They can slide someone else into center. Good depth piece for Detroit who has starter potential.
Two kickers go in round six. Joshua Carty out of Stanford to the Los Angeles Rams and Cam Little out of Arkansas to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So
don't forget Will Reichard. Specialist.
Oh, Will did I Reichard miss him?
Will Reichard.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep. Will Reichard was the first one off the board
kickers
to the Vikings. Yeah, run on kickers in the sixth. We had the punter in the fourth, like you mentioned, for the Bears. So, hey, kickers are people too, and it makes sense that some of these guys, you start to draft them because you like what they could bring to your team. You want to have some competition out there at that position for sure. I like Devin Leary.
I want a t-shirt made up. Kickers are people too.
Yes, please. That would be great. Them. Yes. I was going to ask you for some hard-hitting kicker analysis, but we'll skip over that. And because we want people to stay awake for the majority of this episode. So we'll skip over that. Two more things in the sixth round. Devin Leary, quarterback, Kentucky to the Ravens. Another good pick for the Ravens, a guy who can compete as a backup there. And big arm, some athleticism. And then Daquan Hardy, I like him in Buffalo as a slot corner. The Bills needed a ton of help in the secondary. They probably still do, but Daquan Hardy has some quickness, has some speed on the inside at nickel that he could be a good player as well. Let's talk a little bit about the Steelers in this round, Andrew. I thought Logan Lee, defensive tackle out of Iowa, and Ryan Watts, cornerback out of Texas, I thought the cornerback value kind of fell off real quick after the fourth round, and I thought the Steelers should probably take a nickel-type guy in the fourth as opposed to waiting, and Watts might even move to safety. So that pick was a little strange to me for the Steelers, despite having a really good draft overall. I do like Logan Lee, but he's another one of these tweeners, Andrew, and it just seems like the Steelers keep trying this. Can Lee stick? I don't know, but they keep trying it, and I don't know if it's ever going to work. We'll see. Good luck to both of these guys, but what did you think about these picks for the Steelers?
Yeah, he's a higher upside Isaiah Loudermilk, a guy the Steelers traded up for a couple of years ago. I like him better than I do Loudermilk, but he's got shorter arms. He has active hands, and he wins a lot of it just with his outstanding hand usage. He's a hand fighter, and that's how he wins a lot of his reps. But he's got to add more core strength. 281, you got to get closer to 295, 300. With his frame, he has the ability to do it, but he's got to get up there if he wants to stick in the NFL. He just gets pushed off the ball way too easy. Overall, I felt the value did not present itself here for the Steelers. And then I would even say the other pick, Jeremy, I was kind of scratching my head at this one too, Ryan Watts from Texas. He's going to have to move to safety in the NFL. He cannot swivel his hips fast enough. He struggles to change direction. But, I mean, he's 6'3", 208, so it's understandable. You got to move him to safety, though. He's going to be a safety. I think he's a practice squad guy. I didn't care for him what I saw. He in corner, he was just in a lot of off coverage. Couldn't really see his physicality because of the scheme. Maybe he has more than what I thought, but I thought for a guy that big, he lacked physicality. I don't see him making the roster. I think Logan Lee has a better chance of making the roster of the two, but I don't see Logan Lee making this roster. The Texas corner, excuse me. It's been a long day.
Yeah, Watts. No, that's okay. If Watts makes the roster, it's because he does great things on special teams, and we'll see how it plays out from there on the defensive side of the ball. But let's move into the seventh round, Andrew. I really liked Brendan Rice at this point, wide receiver out of USC, son of Jerry Rice, going to the Chargers. The Chargers quietly put together a really nice draft here, addressing several needs. They had a lot of picks, Andrew, and good thing too, because they needed each and every one of these for this roster. I know a lot of people probably think Jim Harbaugh comes in and really turns things around pretty quickly, but they had a lot of holes. It's nice to see them actually filling those holes with good players and good picks. I really liked Brendan Rice at this point in the draft. I wasn't a huge fan if somebody was going to take him in like rounds three or four. But once you get him at six, or excuse me, in the seventh round, it makes a ton of sense. He's got some upside. And obviously, coming from a football family, he knows how to play the game. He knows how to approach it. So I really like that pick. I liked MJ Devonshire from Pitt going to the Raiders. The Raiders need corners every year, it seems, and this was a good pick for them. Did you have anything you wanted to say about either of those or any other picks that you liked in round seven?
A couple guys that I liked in this round was Jonah Lalu, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma, going to, yep, I believe it was the Indianapolis Colts at 234. Yep. Yeah. He's a transfer from Hawaii, and we were just talking about Logan Lee a minute ago. If the Steelers wanted to go defensive tackle, this would have been the way I would have preferred them going. 6'5", 292, needs to add a little bit more weight to the frame, but it is pro day. 33.5-inch arms, good arm length, better than Lee's, I believe. Ran a 4.98 in the 40, had a 36-inch vertical jump, Jeremy.
Woo!
This guy's got jumps at almost 300 pounds. 4.59 in the shuttle, 24 bench reps. The guy's a good athlete. And then another interesting one from Texas A&M Commerce, Levi Drake Rodriguez. This guy is an interesting story. So his first 3 years in college, he was at Southwestern Assemblies of God. He transfers to Texas A&M Commerce, has a couple good seasons. This past season had 5.5 sacks, 7.5 tackles for loss from the interior, I might add. And I believe it was 2021, his last year at Assemblies of God. He had, I believe, 7.5 sacks and double-digit tackles for loss. So this guy's had production on the interior of the defensive line, and he's got enough size, 6'2", a little bit smaller frame, 32.38-inch arms. The length is a little bit lacking, but when you talk about the team, when you talk about the team that he's going to in Minnesota and a lot of their 4-3 looks, he's going to get a good look as that 3 technique. I like Levi Drake Rodriguez. He's a good run defender. He disengages well for having shorter arms. I think that he's going to be able to carve out a role potentially down the line as long as Minnesota's patient with him.
I mentioned Carly's going to the Colts earlier in the show and how it wasn't a big fit for me. But another guy who kind of fits that mold of player, James Williams, a guy we talked about early in the draft process, goes to Tennessee. And I actually like this for Tennessee. I think their coaching staff we'll have a handle on how to maybe use him, but he's a guy who can play multiple different spots. You probably view him as a dime linebacker at this point, a guy who can probably drop in coverage. But, you know, he's 6'4", 231, and he didn't run very well at the combine, which was surprising. I thought his athleticism was more apparent on film than it was in Indianapolis. But he goes to Tennessee. And I like this as an upside play in the seventh round. So good for them. I thought that was a good pick. You had another Washington wide receiver a wide receiver named Washington going to Miami. So they're building that offense. They love to work there. And then you had a couple of your Michigan guys, Andrew, go in this round. Cornelius Johnson to the Chargers, obviously, going to reconvene there with Junior Colson and Jim Harbaugh. Michael Barrett goes to the Panthers. I like that pick for them as well. And there was one more that I'm trying to find here. Oh, Jalen Harrell going to Tennessee. I thought that was a good fit for the Titans too. Some guys with some high upside from your favorite college program. So yes. What do you think about the Michigan guys and their landing spots?
I like them. I thought Barrett would be a guy that Harbaugh would bring. I mean, he's already had him for 6 years. Why not just bring him to the NFL? But sure, that didn't happen. But you got Barrett, you got Johnson. You mentioned just a minute ago, Ladarius Henderson's another guy I really like at Houston. But yeah, you mentioned a lot of those guys, and they're high effort players, and they got drafted for a reason. They were big parts of the Michigan success. And you think of Jalen Harrell as well. He's going to get playing time immediately because the Titans has got nothing at edge rusher right now. So he's going to get some playing time early on. One other guy I wanted to mention that I thought was a good fit, that's Jaheim Bell to the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
He's not an inline blocker, but you put him out in the slot, this guy will bully whoever you've got out there in the nickel, whether it's a nickel corner, a linebacker, whatever. The dude can block. He's just not an inline tight end. He's not big enough to be an inline tight end. But he is a weapon in the passing game. I remember watching him as a freshman and sophomore at Florida State. And the dude just found ways to get open, and he was good after the catch too. So Jaheim Bell is a guy that I think can carve out a utility piece role, kind of the Swiss Army knife of the New England Patriots' new look offense?
The Patriots drafted two quarterbacks in this draft. We forgot to mention Joe Milton III going there in round six. I like that for the Patriots. And you just got to keep swinging at that position until something lands. And we saw last year, backup quarterback is more important than ever after the injury crisis that was last year. And so let's revisit one topic before we go, because we've been dogging the Atlanta Falcons all week on this show, and they've been kind of getting crushed throughout the process. Do you put any weight into the fact that you've got a guy now who you can feel very comfortable with as your backup quarterback for the next two, maybe 3 years, and then he can just slide right on in down the road? I know he's older. I get that. That is probably my biggest issue with this whole scenario for the Falcons. But who knows what Kirk Cousins is going to bring to the table from a health perspective. I wish they would have told Kirk that this was a possibility beforehand. That's kind of where my biggest problem lies with this, that they just kind of snuck it in there and hoped it wouldn't be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. But philosophically, does it make some sense from that perspective? As the biggest story from the draft, really, outside of Caleb Williams and the other quarterbacks going to their respective teams, I think this is the biggest story in the draft. So let's hit it one more time before we go.
I think the biggest problem with this move is that they spent $160 million on Kirk Cousins. And yeah, when you draft someone in the top 10, the expectation is that at some point you got to play him, especially someone who's 24 years old. And when you're looking at Kirk Cousins, this is not a situation as a new head coach you want to make. Obviously, the ownership had to have been on board with it. You know, you don't make a move like this without the owner being aware and being in approval of it. But I still struggle with this one. If Michael Penix Jr. is great, but you can't tell me you didn't know that you liked Michael Penix more than a month ago when you signed Kirk Cousins. You can't say, oh, well, within the past month, our interview with Michael Penix made us know we got to take him number 8 overall. A move like this, you knew you were taking him.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you have told Kirk Cousins that? Were you afraid that he wouldn't sign with you? And if he wasn't going to sign with you, if you brought him in, why would you bring him in? Because then you're just asking for trouble like you're asking for it now. I don't think it was managed well overall. And if Kirk Cousins, there's a chance he's not ready to start the beginning of the year. What do you do if Penix comes in, plays really well, Cousins is ready midseason? From a business perspective, you've got to start your $160 million quarterback that you just spent money on. Yeah. At some point, you've got to, regardless of how good Michael Penix is. He does that unless you find a team that somehow is willing to take on a fresh new contract with him and trade for him, which seems incredibly unlikely, at least in year one, and probably year two as well.
Yeah. I just hope Raheem Morris has a subscription plan to his local Walgreens for Tylenol, because it's going to be a headache all season long answering those questions in the press conferences every week. Training camp. Oh my goodness. Could you imagine his every morning when he wakes up, he's going to have to pop 3 or 4 of those Tylenol just to make it through the day, because the reporter's going to be like, how's Michael Penix look? How's Kirk and Penix's relationship? What every day. And it's only it's reporters doing their jobs. They have to do it, but you can't feel sorry for them. They did it to themselves, but we'll see how it plays out for the Falcons. Could turn out to be a very smart move in the end, but I think in the headache or in the world that they live in right now, it's going to be a major headache. So any other major storylines you want to hit before we head out? Any big winners from the draft real quick before we put a bow on this, the 2024 NFL draft?
Chiefs, Chargers, and Bills, days 1, 2, and 3. I thought there were good picks in each of those days for them. So kudos to you. The AFC continues to get stronger. Yep. Cowboys, you need to find a running back somehow. I'm surprised you didn't draft one. And then Falcons, we just addressed. So yeah, that's what I've got.
I'm going to say one more thing. And I think because it was so it was so set in stone from the beginning of the process, basically, that Caleb Williams was going to go to the Chicago Bears. The Bears, honestly, are the biggest winners of this draft. They have the potential to have landed a generational quarterback talent. They added a superstar, megastar wide receiver at pick 9. They didn't have a lot of picks, Andrew, but they were impactful. You mentioned it earlier. They probably have 5 day one starters, year one starters from this draft class. They're going to help them right away. And they're the big winners. I'm sorry. They're the big winners. They are the ones who have done what Houston did last year, in my opinion, and put together an offseason where they are now a formidable team in the NFC. And watch out, Lions. Watch out, Packers. This team is coming for the NFC North. And don't be surprised if they win it. I won't be surprised if they win it. I won't be surprised if Caleb Williams in year one breaks every passing record that the Bears have ever had, because he's just that much better than anything they've ever had, Andrew. So big, big, big winners in Chicago, kind of overshadowed by the fact that it was just, we knew it was going to happen, but they're my big winners.
Another big winner in that same division with the Minnesota Vikings, doing the exact same thing.
True.
They did last year, that the Texans did last year. They get their quarterback. They trade up to get an Alabama edge rusher who was arguably the best defensive player in the draft.
An excellent point. Sneaky, Andrew, the AFC North is probably going to be the best division in football again this year. The NFC North might not be far behind, to You're be honest. Wrong. And as we approach, and Andrew, you and I are famous for our predictions around here. We're gonna hit those hard and heavy. Might have some fun ones brewing as the NFL season comes up to us. The next thing on the calendar for the NFL is the schedule release in May. So keep an eye on that. We'll have all the breakdowns for that here on FFSN and wherever you get your podcast, whatever team you're tuning into, we will have information and news and notes about everything NFL for you. We'll continue to break down the draft here as well. That's going to do it for us here on this edition of the FFSN NFL Draft Show. It's been fun. For Andrew Wilbar, I'm Jeremy Betts.